Friend, you've stumbled across the Honest Pod with Carrie Garcia, where my hope is to create a safe space to share stories that foster healing, hope, and the honesty needed to live free and fully alive. And now for this week's episode of the Honest Pod. Guys, I have something so exciting today. Today, my worlds are colliding in the best ways. I have not only, as you guys have been listening to the past few weeks, the amazing Kathy Lorzel on, but we decided to bring in the hostess with the mostest. We decided to bring in Shara too. And they're both here.
Hello, so everybody. Exciting. I know.
It is like a party. I knew it. I was like, you know what? Why am I dating one when I could be dating both? That's really what it came down to.
Oh, and you know what? And that's the future.
All right. So, and there we go. So here's what I want to, we're going to do something fun today that a lot of you guys have been sending in questions, DMing questions. You have had questions for us at conferences that we've been at. And so we have so many, but and so we'll probably do this again, but we've narrowed it down today to some questions. But before we do that, this made me think of, I don't know for you guys out there, you guys have hosted conferences or, you know, you've been to them, but when you go to a conference as a speaker, you tend to get like a little gift bag. And, you know, you get gift bags in your hotel room or you get them, you know, behind the stage or whatever when you go. And I have never asked you about this, Kathy. And I've never shared this with you. And sure, you've even come to some speaking stuff with me. Have you ever gotten, they gave you some gifts too, haven't they?
I did get one. It wasn't weird.
Oh, you're
it was
cutting
the
in
coolest
and out.
Thing. Hmm. And the person who gave, I am?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Frozen. Uh-oh. You're
no.
frozen.
Oh, no.
Am I back?
You are back, but frozen. I don't know what that means. This is what happens when we do technology. Okay. So have you ever gotten a gift from?
Okay. Yes, I have gotten a gift and it's been really cool. It was not weird at all. So I'll share mine, but you guys go first. No, I was working at a different conference. I was doing a hosting job with Jen Jones, actually.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So you normally get like a little gift in the thing. And sometimes the gifts are really elaborate and sometimes they're like what, you know, they're just like a nice little t-shirt or whatever. I mean, I've been at ones where I have gotten literally shirts from Zara. I've gotten a pair of shoes. I've gotten jewelry,
what?
Like full on jewelry. I got a $100 gift card on top, a Starbucks $100 gift card on top of the money they've already paid for me to do this. Yeah.
Wow. You're very fancy.
I know. Our mom got a YSL bag at one of her speaking gigs.
Yes. And I know that.
A YSL bag.
I didn't get the YSL bag, but I got a Marc Jacobs like full on wallet. I think it was Marc Jacobs. It was like a fancy
Crazy.
One. Yeah. We both spoke at that fancy one, but yeah, she got.
You guys, I'm just telling you that I'm very proud of myself. The fact that I just was like YSL, and I'm like, I really because I've been watching
like,
the new look, on about Christian Dior and Coco Chanel, and so the only reason I was like, I can do this,
it's here.
That's what I love about you. I love that you just have zero concept and clue and zero care. Yeah. Okay, so here's what I want to know. Those were the good things. Have you ever gotten something crazy or have you ever gotten something that you really liked, Kathy? Like,
well, I just, as you are, all of a sudden I'm realizing our deodorant story,
I
Carrie.
I wondered if you were going to bring that.
What deodorant?
So, oh my God. Okay, So I have been, you know, speaking on kind of little stages for a long time. And then I started to kind of move into bigger speaking engagements. And I'm from Seattle. I live in Seattle. I've been in Seattle for 20 years. And, you know, we're all about like the natural things. Like, so we try to non-toxic, you know, like I use the sheets for my washer that don't actually work, but we do it anyways, even though we you can still smell dirty socks because you feel good about yourself. It's
yeah, of course.
Fine. So I do that with my body. And so I started, especially over COVID, really transitioned away from the heavy duty deodorant to deodorant that works in Seattle. That's very temperate. You don't really get very hot. You don't get very cold. Like, it's fine. And you're not anxiety sweating when you're by yourself. And so the first time I went to speak at Carrie's church, it was like 2021.
But I've known you before. And there's a reason why I did this.
Yeah, you did. Well, and so all of a sudden I get there and Carrie has this beautiful little gift basket ready for me. Cause you know, it's like one of my first big ones going to be recorded and all stuff anyways. And so, but in there is deodorant. It's a spray Dove. Oh. I'll never forget it. It was like a travel little deodorant thing. And I'm like, oh, that's so nice of her to give me deodorant. You know, I'm kind of like, you know, but then I go out and I start speaking and I come back at a break and I can smell because I used my
Toms or whatever.
Hippy dippy little. Yeah, totally. And mm-hmm. that does not cut it when you are anxiety sweating in front of like 300 mm-hmm. people.
You need
space. And so you do. And so yeah. I was back there and I'm like, Carrie, God bless you. And so I'm like spraying this stuff on and like all over, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. If you did know you what I mean.
Did you go to yeah. the bathroom and get like a washcloth and try to do a little quick wipe down? I remember
absolutely.
Doing that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Oh yeah. And cause it's serious business. Cause you're like, cause you know, afterwards I have like book signings and all this stuff and people are going to be coming up to me. And I was like, I smell like funk. And so from now on, so I still, and Carrie's given me three different speaking things and I have all of her little deodorants that I now I've gone through two and yeah. I still have one more that I bring with me on the road.
It's like going green like 80% of the time. You're like, listen, in Seattle, I'm all in. But like, when I get on stage, it's all hands on deck.
When I hit the heat of that Atlanta, my undercarriage is going to need some help.
Some light yeah. dusting, if you will.
Some light dusting. I mean, I spray that stuff on like
and
it
that
is
was because
business.
I was like, this is the moment when you know you've, you know, whatever the mark is, but you've arrived. Like you are now at a level where you are not speaking to a room of 25 people or at the Allender Center where you're very comfortable. Okay. You are like now invited yeah. into a world where you are on a stage and you are pitting out. And I love you too much to let you be my smelly friend. Like you can't. Yeah.
No, you can't. You're now an athlete. That's yeah. what it is. It's like, you can't, you're the work that you're doing up on that stage, your whole body is in and it's working
yeah,
some crap out.
There is a lot going on. So yeah. I was a part of your crazy gift and it was
yes,
a good
were.
Gift. I've got you beat.
Thank
so
you.
Okay. Share you're ready.
I went in and got the gift. I, to be honest with you, I don't really remember the church that this was, but it was a church. And I went in and I saw the basket and nothing was wrapped in the basket. But it was all like kind of in there displayed nicely. And I was like, wait, what is that? And I got closer. And as I got closer, I saw a couple of things that were just so odd to me. First was, do you guys remember back in the 80s when they put like hosiery in an egg? And it said like legs, yeah. but no. It's L-E-G-G-S, yeah. legs.
Yes. Legs, you know how to use them. That's what? The yeah. that.
So
that's the jingle.
I saw that there was the egg with the hosiery in it. And I go, oh, they got me hose, like nylons, but not like cute tights, but like hosiery, you know, like hosiery. And then I glanced over to the right and I go, what are these? And they had gotten me nighttime pads. like the boat.
The mattress.
Like, tell me a man put this basket without telling me. Period. Like a man's like, I don't know what the girl's
some
like.
Some hosiery.
Let's get her some hose. And, oh, let's but get her the durable pads. Yeah.
I didn't.
She's got to be bleeding. They bleed all the time, right? No way, she's not.
I didn't even think about that. But yes, a guy had to put this together. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, it was.
No, or like a 75-year-old yes. woman that is like,
I don't know. She's probably still bleeding.
What if she forgot?
What
Like, because, you know, it's like the mortification of getting a run in your hose.
That's
right.
A thing.
That's
for,
a thing
from 1982,
50
yeah.
years ago.
1954.
Right.
Yeah.
But also the pads. So I got that. I had that. I had a bath bomb, which I always find hilarious because I'm like, what? Who's taking a bath
in a hotel room?
Yeah. Thank you. And I think I got something else, but it was like some kind of like a book or something. But I was like, like some kind of weird book. But I just remember going, what was the thought process here when you got me night?
And what was the budget?
No, it was.
It's giving 99 cents store.
I'll tell you who put that basket together. And it's my grandma. And God bless her.
And that's why if you're listening and you were the one that gave me that, I just want you to know, I love you.
God bless.
Like I love where it went. It's making for a great story. If you aren't the person that's done that and you're going to do a conference, opt out. Unsubscribe to the.
They probably got the pads covered.
But do give me Motrin and deodorant.
Yes, that's the moral of this story. And anytime you want to give me
there's
a Zara shirt.
There's some things that are practical. Oh, yeah.
And a Zara shirt. Throw that in there.
Throw that, the YSL bag.
Carrie, what happened? You could just get me an H&M shirt, Carrie. Just
know,
next time.
I will.
I mean, I don't need, you know, the fancy stuff.
You don't want a graphic
tee? Tell you that, I've been watching this show about Christian Dior. I do. I do want a graphic tee. But I was at the park yesterday, and there was this guy where, like, very, like, worky outy guy wearing a Dior sweatshirt. And I was like, where have we gotten? Like, I don't understand.
For all of it. If you're wearing Dior, you paid for all of it. This is just for show. These are for pictures. You're not actually working out. You got surgery.
I have one sweater that says Coco Chanel on it, and it's 100% fake. And I don't even wear that. Like, I wear that when I'm going somewhere nice, and it's a sweatshirt. I'm like,
it's like, it says Coco in really small letters. It says Puffs Chanel. So you know it's
knockoff. It's Coco Chanel.
Coco Channel.
Oh my gosh. I'm not even sure I can know the difference. I would be like,
thank you. It's so nice. Oh my gosh. Well, I just felt like it was important for us to just have a moment where we can go, hey, these conferences, we do get a lot of questions. We do get to speak a lot. And that is just so fun for us. But also there's just these just quirky things that happen when you go to these conferences that a lot of people just don't know about. And there's so many things I could tell you about that. But I thought I needed someone to know that I got night pads and legs nylons.
It needed to be said.
I needed to get it out.
Keep that gem.
All right. So Shara, you're going to lead us in hosting today. We've gotten a few questions, right?
Yeah.
So we've gotten some questions. Let us know about it. Ask away. We're here for it. Question answer, everybody.
Okay. So personally, I'm really excited for anyone who's listened to the podcast when I'm on. I'm the question girl because I have a million questions. These are like some pretty great ones. So you're not going to want to go anywhere. This is a two-part podcast and you're going to want to listen to all of them.
Yes, you are.
Okay. So for the first one, we have Carrie. This is for you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Kind of.
Feeling good about this? All right. We're kind of just diving in here, guys, because this goes like from that really light to
this
like,
goes from
heavy
pads
here.
To heavy. So this goes from light flow to heavy flow. Real quick.
What's our demographic? How many men do we have?
Probably none now.
Fantastic. Yeah.
All right, Carrie.
Yes.
Am I back? Am I frozen?
Yes. No, okay, you're good.
Can religion be an effective place to self-medicate against reality and even to escape from God?
Oof.
I know, right?
Oof. Baby. Can religion be a place of self-medication? And also read it again.
Can medicate against reality and even to escape from God.
Glad you have this one.
Here's the truth. Of course. I mean, religion is such a great way. And by religion, I'm not talking about relationship with humans. I'm talking about it is so good when you can be operating. And by good, I mean not good, but you can be operating in a place that has structure that says, if you do this, this, and this, you'll be good, you'll be worthy, you'll be seen, you'll be known. This is how you get to stay in belonging. And a lot of times religion, when it's not done according to how Jesus really wants it done, then it actually allows us to not have to be seen. It actually allows us to just operate in behavior modification, which really does feel really good in the moment. Like, man, I can do all these things for Jesus. I can do all these things and feel good. And it allows a sense of going, I don't actually have to deal with the undercurrent of what's going on with my life. If I just do these religious acts, then I'm good. Mm. And when it comes to God, if we approach God through the grid of religion, then, and probably for whoever has written this, their world is set up to be, you know, through probably a story of if I do this, this, and this, I can stay in belonging. Well, then I'm just going to put that in on God, right? Like I'm going to be able to go, man, God's really going to love me when I do all of these behaviors that are going to make me earn his love. And, mm-hmm. and then that's going to allow me to feel this kind of the hole in my heart or this tension that I'm feeling. And so I think we do it more mm-hmm. than we even want to admit. I think we use religion mm-hmm. as a means to medicate. Here's my two cents. I think we use religion just like somebody else would use drugs. I think we use it as mm-hmm. a way of going, I need this to numb what is really going on. So if I can do that through the grid of religion by getting people's approval or gosh, even getting mm-hmm. God's approval through this, then that's going to incite in me a high of, I need to keep doing more of that. I need to keep doing more. So let me get on mm-hmm. bigger stages. Let me help out more in the church. Let me stay busy. Let me create another ministry. And the whole time we're doing this in the name of Jesus, but we're not actually healing. We're not actually knowing God's best for us. We're not even knowing the face of God or Jesus for that matter. All we know is really it's just another place where we are placing a false cycle of freedom to try to find ourselves mm-hmm. or find freedom in a structure that actually wants you, in a religious structure that actually wants you to behavior modify and do for your worth. And that yeah. is... I mean, what a great setup for megalomaniacs and narcissists and for people who really are very, very broken, because I can create a structure where there is hierarchy, there is places to climb, there are things to do. And that feeds, mm-hmm. that does feed something temporarily in a sense of I belong to something and now I feel a part of something. So I never have to actually look at me. I don't ever actually have to deal yeah. with me. But it doesn't last. It ends up usually creating a church herd, and it usually ends up creating, this didn't actually fill the need. And so I'm going to go to something else to do that.
Yeah. So we're missing in structuring ourselves around that. We're missing the ease of just being.
Yes.
Is what you're saying. Like the ease and the comfort of just being instead of being consumed with the doing always.
Yeah. I mean, this is a bigger,
because from an outsider, you're like, if you like look at the structures of religion, you're like, oh my gosh, there's safety in that. I'm still pursuing the Lord. Obviously your ego can get involved and things can get really messy. But if you feel safe, it's like, okay, why would I choose something else if I'm feeling safe and good here? What is the depth that I'm missing?
Right. I mean, Kathy, you would definitely speak to this more, but like, I mean, you're also talking about arousal structures here. You're also you're talking about a lot of things that how does this make my body come alive? And mm-hmm. you know, the question being, can I use religion as a way to meet, to not find myself or sit with myself? And the truth is you can use anything that is a structure that keeps you from having to deal with your own heart or your own story, or really look at your own face and the trueness of that. Anything that takes that place is going, in my opinion, is going to be a place where it's going to cause a lot of damage, because it sets you up for a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. And it's because you don't actually mm-hmm. know yourself. You don't actually have autonomy. You don't actually know like your mm-hmm. own voice, or really the voice of God, because it's run all through the grid of you have to do and behave properly for you to stay in belonging. And the moment that you mess up, you leave. And so with the question being, what if I'm using religion to actually mitigate my pain or whatever, is that happening? And can I do that on God? It's like, yeah, of course. I mean, what a high, right? To feel good when you're a part mm-hmm. of something until it doesn't work anymore. And it will get to the until it doesn't work anymore, because the body, the spirit of God that lives inside you is always looking for truth, and it's looking for real freedom.
Yeah.
and it won't be found in religious mm-hmm. construct. It just won't, because mm-hmm. it will leave you lacking. I don't know. Any thoughts to that, Kathy?
Well, I think I think what we're really talking about is religious dogmatism. And so when you feel insecure, when you have trauma, when you have things that are, you know, the world is very uncertain and there's no guarantee that things are going to go well, you know, that even the idea that if you believe in God, then all will be well. Well, that's just not true. Like, we know every disciple got a horrific mm-hmm. death, not to go down, you know, I mean, it's just mm-hmm. things don't work out the way that they work out, in the sense of we're actually allowing ourselves to be used by God and to move into places of healing and flourishing in a different way, but it doesn't look, you know, clean. Mm-hmm. And we really want to avoid pain. We want to avoid the ambiguity of what it means to live in this life. We want to avoid the fact that we can't know for certain if one of us is going to die of cancer, if something's going to happen to one of our kids, if, you know, we're going to go into civil war. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. And when we cling to, you know, religion versus God, it soothes us because it gives us answers that feel clean. And God actually never promised us that. Jesus, the scriptures are very unclear. Every single question that was asked was answered by a story or almost a riddle or a sense of, like, you mm-hmm. know, the only thing that Jesus wrote on was sand,
right.
the mm-hmm. ground, right? Like, he never gave us concrete things. We gave that to ourselves later because we felt very unsure of the mystery that God mm-hmm. invited us into. And so when we cling to the certainty that is actually very uncertain, that makes us feel better and feel more secure. And it's a false security that actually leads to a mm-hmm. lot of damage.
So, I mean, the question being, can it be an effective place? The answer, in my opinion, is it's effective until it's not effective anymore. Because you don't do...
I was going to say, I almost read the question... Even though it's not my question, but I almost, is it a safe place? Like, is it a safe place to lose yourself or to medicate is in the church mm-hmm. or in religion?
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
That's kind of how I am reading the question, mm-hmm. even though she used effective. Like, yeah, can you do it? Yeah. But is it a safe place to go and do that? Because mm-hmm. it's with your faith, mm-hmm. it's, you know, your relationship with God. But I think all of the things you both are mm-hmm. saying speak to that, whether it be safety or effective. Yeah. Like,
I think God's intention for the church, Jesus's intention for the church, was for it to be a safe place, for the safest place to talk about anything, to be able to come and be loved mm-hmm. on and to be cared for, not to be fixed. That's not our job, but to be a safe place where we mm-hmm. can process what we're doing. I don't think that there are a lot of churches modeling that. And I'm a big proponent of church. I love church. I'm a pastor in a church. I don't see that a lot of churches are doing that. And so I do believe that God is hopefully raising up a remnant to begin to create some of those spaces. But church in itself, yeah, you are safe and you are unsafe because there are humans. Yeah. And so if you are looking to church to actually help you heal, or actually if you're looking to church to heal you, it will fail you.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts. Okay, next question. That was a good one.
That was good.
We could talk a whole hour on that one.
Seriously. Mm-hmm. I can go really deep. All right, Miss Kathy. What happens if our families or spouses don't support this work? I'm guessing story work maybe is what they're referring to. Have you seen it work out well?
Yeah. We get this question a lot, Kathy. A lot around, like, spouses. All my spouses are doing this. What do I do? You know, all of that. So this is a general question that is asked often.
Yeah. So I'll answer in two ways. One is, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. So hard.
It's really hard when you start to find something that is healing, that you feel excited about, that you're passionate about, or you're hopeful in, and your spouse is like, you know, what are you doing? Like, the amount of spouses that come back and are like, you know, is my wife part of a cult because she has gotten into this whole story work thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, no, but also, you know, tell me more. So there's, you know, so there's a lot of suspicion, but this is what I'll say is that the only person you can change is you. And so, you know, this is a huge piece. There's a man, he died a couple years ago, but his name is David Schnarch, and he talks a lot about the concept of differentiation. And basically what he's saying is to mature both in a relationship and just as a human being, you need to start to understand who you are and manage yourself, your own emotions, know the inner parts of your own heart, and this sense that somehow someone else is going to know that and give you that without you doing your own work first is unfair. And that's so good. No matter what, you have to do your mm-hmm. own work, mm-hmm. no matter what. Mm-hmm. If your spouse is supportive, it's maybe a little easier. If they're not supportive, it's a little more challenging, but the work doesn't mm-hmm. change. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that will change your marriage or even potentially change your spouse is that you start moving into more healed places and you're able to handle circumstances in a different way. Mm-hmm. Now, that may really frustrate your spouse, but that will also, you're going to kind of reach a point where you'll be at a crossroads mm-hmm. of, look, you know, I'm not going to live this way anymore. It's like, you know, let's say together as a couple, you've lived a very quiet, meek life where, you know, you come home after work, you cook dinner, you clean up, and then you watch Netflix until you go to bed and then you sleep and you do it all over the next day. And you start to do this work healing. You start to come alive. You want to go hiking. You want to go on trips. You want to do different sorts of ministry. You want to get more educated. You want to do story work, maybe yourself, right? Your spouse is then going to freak out because you're changing the script. It's also inviting them to more life. But ultimately, they get to choose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have to choose. Do I want this? This is so... It's happened in with the disciples and Jesus that there are so many stories of people saying, gosh, if I follow you, I have to leave my family. And Jesus is like, uh-huh. Mm. And I don't think that means you need to divorce your spouse by any means, right? But it does mean that you're leaving some sort of allegiance and loyalty there that is not, you know, you still have the loyalty to the marriage and the commitment, but your loyalty then is towards God and towards your own healing. And you're not turning your back on your spouse, but you're mm-hmm. shifting where mm-hmm. there's been a false loyalty, a loyalty that isn't actually healthy. And really a commitment towards, a dead mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. And so that, again, that's painful. But it is not something to be shy, like you don't shy away from that just because it's hard. In fact, you just have to trust that God is working mm-hmm. and you don't know how your spouse is going to respond to the invitation mm-hmm. of life. And if they hate you for it and they never respond, that's their mm-hmm. journey. Mm-hmm. And that's heartbreaking, but that's not mm-hmm. yours to hold.
I do think that there's something to be said for, when the science is when something changes, everything changes, right? And so there's there is going to be change. And what I hear you saying, Kathy, is that as you change is going to happen. But at least as you're healing and becoming more of who God created you to be, it actually frees your spouse up to make that choice of where they want to go. I have seen the question being, you know, have you seen this work? I've seen couples begin to come together. My husband, who really did think like, is she in a cult? What's going on here? Is now like a facilitator for story work. So that's a cool part of the story. I've also seen, there's a woman that goes to our church who's done deep work. She's graduated with Freedom Academy as a coach, and she's doing story work and stuff. And her husband just wants nothing to do with it. But here's what's been really cool. Is she's living her life and it is given her capacity to love him because she actually understands his story. Now, this isn't like an abusive relationship or something, but like just a guy that just is not, because of his story, he's just not ready to go there. And I don't know if he's never going to be ready to go there, but it's actually expanded her capacity of grace and mercy to be able to love him in a way that it's like God gave her the eyes of how God sees him. And so because of that, over the course of years now of her doing all this work and then graduating, her husband actually came to church for the first time, I think like Easter or something, and sat there and not that that's the end all be all, but that is like a unforced, there is no demand on you. There's just no demand. Mm-hmm. I love you. I'm for you. I am growing and healing. Doesn't mean that I don't love you, but I am going to heal and grow. And which forced him to have to be curious and look at something or not look at something. But, you know, because I do see that a lot where people are like, well, I just can't stay married then because we're just, I'm healing and he's not healed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I don't think you have justification for that. Like, I just don't, you're just not happy anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, the happiness is relative. I'm just telling you, you're going to be with somebody in the future that you're not happy with. Like, there are moments and seasons.
Yeah. Well, and happiness is up to you. Hmm. It's up to you.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. So, I mean, and again, we're not talking about people who are in abusive relationships where you should just stick it out. Like, that's not what we're saying here. And, you know, there are circumstances where when you cannot find kindness and love for one another, then you do need to let each other go. You know, there are moments that way, and you may disagree with that, but that's how I see it.
For sure.
And you know, but if there is still, if you can grow in mutual respect, you know, whether or not you're happy is up to how you're handling your life. Mm. Your spouse can't make you unhappy. Mm-hmm. Mm. Your spouse can be unkind, and then you get to decide what do you need to do about that? How do you need to create limits? How do you need to create spaces where you're finding life in different ways? You know, but again, like this idea that people make us unhappy, and this is a really hard, this is a thin line to,
I'm here for it. Yeah.
To walk right here.
Yeah. Woo! Me too.
Yeah, right. But I just think that so many of us are like, well, I can't be happy until my spouse changes.
Baloney. Yep.
Beep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's just not true. That's a way for you because you don't actually know how to love yourself. Mm.
Okay, and can we go off?
Oh, okay.
All right, that was awesome. Like, just call it as it is, period.
Right? Like, well, and that's the thing. Like, I'll get so many couples who are like, well, you know, my spouse you know, doesn't see me. I'm like, well, look, we've just spent 6 months talking about the fact that you don't mm-hmm. see yourself.
Yeah.
So why are you expecting your spouse to all of a sudden see you in a way that you have such self-loathing and contempt? You know, you can't get up in the morning without cursing your body when you put mm-hmm. on your jeans. Mm-hmm. Well, your spouse isn't going to fix that for you. And it's not fair to ask them to. Now they can be kind and understand your war and be with you in that if you build a collaborative relationship between the two of you, which mm-hmm. is we want that. But ultimately, you know, if you haven't done your own internal work to understand what's going on here, mm-hmm. someone else can't fix that for you. You yeah. want them to be the magical mother, the magical father that you mm-hmm. didn't have. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be grieved, but that's not their job.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was, am I going, mm-hmm. can you guys hear me?
Okay, yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking as you were talking about it is, to me, like, I'm reading this question, I'm hearing someone who's having a hard time extracting themselves from the role of being totally enmeshed in their relationship with their husbands, where they're like, I can't be independent and move independently. If he disagrees, mm-hmm. how am I going to have a successful marriage? Because he's not happy. So what you're covering right now, it does feel very like that is the internal struggle underneath. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
it is. Yep. And that's, I mean, I love everything that you're saying. And I think we live in a world that produces, if you're not happy, then just leave. And that's for everything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it's hard, then just do something else. And so we have vapid mm-hmm. Character, people with vapid character and, you know.
Right. Yeah. Without the understanding that you're the common denominator in all of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's super, I mean, it's super hard because who doesn't want to be in a marriage that's loving and who doesn't want to be in a marriage where as I'm healing, I want them to heal. And I get this, this comes back to even the reality of what we were talking about in the first question is the truth is that for many of like life is not roses. Like it's hard. And how are you going to, the only thing that you can control is you and how you're going to heal. And even some of that you can't. You get a leukemia diagnosis, you can't control that, you know? So there are just some things where you go, man, like if I want to truly find happiness, I've really got to understand. And I think happiness is relative. I think joy is more of probably what people like, what people really desire, but they just don't understand how to have subterranean joy in the midst of really hard things. Like when the scripture says, count it all joy. Well, this doesn't mean that Jesus is asking you to walk around going, you know, I'm just so glad that my mom died and that my husband has, you know, is a jerk, you know, like that's not what he's saying. He's saying you count it joy because I'm with you in the midst of this. I am with you. And, and you're going to have a sense of grounding and peace and knowing and shalom, even in the midst of, and I think that's what's true for this relationship. You know, you're like, as you heal, you will have more capacity for joy, for love, for your enemy.
Yep.
Beyond that. Yep. So good.
And for those of you who want more information on this, the book that I go to every time, even when I'm in my own space with my husband, it's called Intimacy and Desire by David Schnarch. And it is, there's a lot about, you know, intimacy and other things too, but obviously it's intimacy and desire. But it's a really good outline if you're curious about how to move towards this in terms of your own work and what's holding you back. I find it to be a very, very helpful resource.
So good. We'll put that in the show notes. All right. We probably have time for like two more questions.
All right. Okay. So the next question is going to be for Carrie. Okay. How does our trauma inform our attachment to God? And if we are insecure in our attachment to God, what can we do to heal and repair?
Yes, every relationship that you have is run through the grid of how what has shaped you, period. And so we have a grid in which we see relationships. And that would be, you know, psychology term would be like through attachment, like my attachment, how I was raised and what kind of attachment that I have. And whatever we know to be true in our little brains and in our little world is going to be put on every relationship that we have. And God is a God of this relationship. It's relational. Even if your relationships with your spouse, you know, I mean, your parents are transactional, that's how you're going to see God. How you were raised is how you're going to see God. And so when we're not, when we don't understand, this is why story work for me has been so healing, is because one, I had disorganized attachments. So I'm all out there. I'm all crazy, you know, but, what I began to learn about myself is to understand how I was raised and the stories that shaped me very much dictated how I thought God loved me. And then how I thought what he was going to want for me, what, how we were going to keep our relationship intact. And for a while I was like, I don't even want any relationship with him because I couldn't keep up with the demand that I felt I needed to do. But to understand your attachments, to understand how you attach in relationship and how you, and what you missed when you were younger in those places. If you relay that and understand that more, you're going to be able to have a more truer understanding of how you see God. And I really believe that this is for every human out there. I mean, maybe not every, that's dramatic, but 99%, you have to rewire your attachments and how you see how God, how you need to be loved, how you were treated and how you were shown love, in order for you to be able to see God. So when the question is, you know, how do we, if we have insecure attachments, how do we begin to repair and heal? I personally, and Kathy, maybe you could speak to this, but I actually don't think you can actually start with, I think you can start with the knowledge of knowing who God says you are, but I don't think that you can totally really understand his love for you until you understand where you've not been loved well and how that's shaped your mind and your body. Because I can know a lot of things in my head. I knew every scripture. I mean, not every, but a lot. I preached, I taught, my dad taught all kinds of stuff on scripture and understanding God and who God, I knew I was a child of God. I knew, you know, I'm a holy nation. I'm righteous because of God's righteousness. I knew all of that. And I still had no concept that God really like wanted to like dance in a field with me. I mean, I was like in the Lord's army. Yes, sir. you know, I may never march in the infantry or ride the cavalry or shoot the artillery, but I'm in the Lord's army. I mean, this is what I was bred to do. And so I had no concept, even outside of all those words, they were all running through the grid of how I was raised. So that no matter how much I knew, it was running through. It's like these glasses that I had. These glasses said, this is what God thinks about you. This is how he loves you. This is what he expects of you. Because those glasses were shaped by those early years of what I believed to be true. And how my dad loved me, really, and how my mom loved me was very much how God was going to love me. And so I do believe repair can happen with God. It has happened for me and many people, but it wasn't until I sat down and really understood more of my story that God could actually shine light and go, hey, that's not actually my voice. That's actually your dad's voice. That's actually your mom's voice. Hey, you're reading that scripture through the lens of performance and demand and not actually through delight. And that began to change everything, but that was impossible for me to do until I really looked at the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. Anything to share on that, Kathy?
No, I was just trying to think of, you know, for those of you who don't know, the idea of attachment theory is new for you. You know, I was trying to think, there's a book that just came out recently called Securely Attached, I think is what it's called. And it's a kind of a helpful, thing to work through if you're unsure of attachment theory, of how that impacts your life, of how that has impacted your style of relating. And it's a very helpful tool, to start to look at, cause it explains a lot of where maybe you're stuck, and where you're more rigid and where you have a harder time receiving or giving love.
We do go over this a lot too in level two. For those of you guys that want to do some of our training, I know Allender does some stuff as well. So they do cover that. It's awesome. Gosh, guys, I am so thankful that you guys sent in these questions. We are going to do another round of this because there are still so many more questions. Let me know if you guys like this. We would love for you guys to share. You're always welcome to write in. I don't actually know how you write in, but I'm sure we can put in the show notes on how to do it. We run a real tight ship over here, but we'd love to hear more. You can message me. You can message Kathy and Kathy can send it to me. You could message Shara. But we would love to hear from you and any questions that you have. If you guys like this, we'd love to keep doing that. But as always, stay curious. Stay honest. Stay curious. This is where we grow and where we heal. And we're just so glad to be on the journey with you. We'll see you guys next week. We are so thankful for the talented Tanya Godsey offering her amazing music with us. You can find Tanya on Spotify and other streaming platforms. And hey, we would love to answer any questions you may have for us right here on the show. So you can send us those questions to hello@thehonestpodcast.com. And as always, thank you for letting us share about the not so easy stories that make us, and entering into the honesty and courage it takes to love who you were created to be. So until the next time, friends, may God's love and kindness be an offering to your heart, both now and always.